Blog Talk Radio.
Down at Eastside Georgia High School, autopsy results show Rounds High School student Kendrick Johnson had no visible injuries to his body. And at this point, they are still ruling out foul play.
How could you possibly say no foul play? You must have took a look at dog face. No peace to just take place. And as you can see, these streets run for KJ. Cause the streets won't help you. Your parents won't help you. Friends and family won't help you. No sleep to the store they can tell you. At night, dog kids probably can't even sleep, but feel relief because they get supported by the streets. And justice will be served till then, no peace. It feels good to see everybody coming together, saying to be at the side, fight for something like hell. No sleep, cause the streets won't help. Rest in peace, KJ, but the family needs help. I see the staff got all the wrong. He must be blind if he can't see somehow.
How could you possibly say no foul play?
You must have took a look at all face. No peace to just take place. And as you can see, these streets run for KJ. Cause the streets won't help you. Your parents won't help you. Friends and family won't help you. No sleep to the store, they tell
you. You can't show me an African American who will go hide in the wrestling mat. Are we trained to go? We don't play like that. Thought the family was stupid, and they were gonna go for that. Grand line, ain't nobody got time for that. The store touched because it could have been me. The store touched because it could have been King. I'm still chasing, I don't see no dreams. And I know Kendrick Johnson had a dream. Say time to pray, Father God, we in need. Say time to pray, Father God, why don't we please? Cause we don't plan on getting no sleep. Thinking to the strip, no justice, no peace.
How could you possibly say no foul play? You must have took a look at all face. No peace to justice take place. And as you can see, these streets run for KJ. Cause the streets won't help you. Your parents won't help you. Friends and family won't help you. No sleep to the store they can tell you.
And welcome to another edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. The rapper you just heard was Bunky White, a Florida rapper, and the name of that song is titled Need Answers. Tonight, Center Stage will cover the tragic death of Kendrick Johnson, a young 17-year-old found dead in a gym mat in the old gymnasium of Louds High School in Valdosta, Georgia, on January 11, 2013. The sheriff of Louds County is calling his death a freak accident, born from a perfect storm, while others are calling his death a case of cold-blooded murder. Tonight, we'll speak with the parents of Kendrick Johnson and their attorney to see why they are asking for the Department of Justice to step in to investigate Kendrick's death, because they suspect foul play. Tonight, our topic is Kendrick Johnson's death, freak accident or murder. But before we begin, we want to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Jackie and Kenneth Johnson, the parents of Kendrick Johnson, along with their attorney, Mr. Shaveen King. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Center Stage.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello.
Do I have everyone on the line?
Yes.
Okay. First, I'd like to say to Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, you have my deepest condolences. I know this must have been a very trying and difficult 8 months. But tonight, if you don't mind, can we begin the show by you all telling us who was Kendrick Johnson?
Kendrick Johnson was 11 sons of ours. He was 17 years old. He loved his sports. He loved it. He loved it to go to school, and he had his whole life ahead of him, and he had all his dreams. He had his mind set right to be somebody.
Mm-hmm. That said, the morning of January 10th was the last time you all saw Kendrick. What was the last conversation? What was the last time you all saw him before he left for school? I'm assuming y'all saw him that morning before he left for school. What was that conversation like?
Well, my wife talked to him. Our last talk with him was on the 9th.
Okay.
That afternoon. I was up in Pennsylvania. I was coming back home. And he called and asked. I was in the midst of buying a truck, and he was wanting to know, have I picked the truck up? And that's what our conversation was about, the truck that I was supposed to start buying.
Really? Ms. Johnson, what was your conversation with him the last time you spoke with him?
Well, he was just getting ready for school, and the last thing I told him was goodbye, and I'll see you later.
Did he seem the same? Was he in the same jovial? I mean, I understand you all say he was a very funny person, kept the whole family laughing. Was he in the same mood that morning when he left?
Yes, he was. He wasn't a morning person, though.
Okay. Okay. He wasn't a morning person. Well, Mr. King, the attorney for the family, can you tell us, we know Kendrick, family last saw him on the 10th when he left for school that morning. Can you pick up the timeline and tell us when the school last say that they saw Kendrick Johnson?
Yes. Based upon a police report that was given to us only months after he disappeared, they indicated in the report that he was last seen on a surveillance video from the school's hallway, or really from the old gym, at 1:09 in the afternoon on the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
He was observed coming, or what you would have to assume was him coming through one of two sets of doors located at the north end of the gymnasium.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see him kind of move in the direction towards the opposite end of the gym, but you're not able, or at least we are not able, to tell what his movements were beyond that, because the report that we were given and the video that we were given doesn't allow us to determine just how much more than just him moving in the south end of the gymnasium that anything took place.
Okay, was his body found on the south end of the gymnasium?
No, it wasn't. It was found on the, it was found in the southeast corner of the gymnasium. Now, one of the things you have to keep in mind is that at 109, school is still in session.
Mm-hmm.
And the next class was to begin at 123.
Mm-hmm.
So according to this report, there was approximately 14 minutes between the time that the video showed him entering the gym and the time at which another class would have begun in that very gymnasium.
Okay, and I understand where Kendrick's body was found in proximity to this class that was going on. There were no barriers or obstructions that would have kept someone that was in that class from seeing Kendrick and what was going on over there if, in fact, what they say happened. Is that correct?
That's right. The gymnasium is not unlike most gymnasiums. It's just an open space that would accommodate a basketball court and enough space around the perimeter to accommodate bleachers. According to the report, the investigators supposedly interviewed all of the students and the instructor who would have been in the gym at 1:23, and none of them indicated that they saw him or saw anyone stuck upside down inside this rolled-up mat that his body was later discovered on the following morning, and nobody heard any sounds of somebody attempting to yell for help. Nobody gave any indication that they were aware of anything that was out of the ordinary on that afternoon.
So is it your belief and the family's belief that Kendrick's body was maybe placed in the gym and that whatever occurred did not occur in the location in which the body was found?
Precisely. You can only imagine that, let's just begin with what the sheriff gave as his theory of what occurred. The sheriff came up with a theory within a matter of less than anywhere from, depending upon how you gauge his account, anywhere from 10 hours to 20 hours from the time that his body was discovered. The sheriff announces to the press that he was attempting to retrieve a shoe that had fallen down the center opening of one of these rolled up pieces of mat. It's a foam rubber type mat that is not a wrestling mat, as has been reported in many news accounts, but a mat that cheerleaders would use to practice their run and tumble routines. And so because it's foam rubber, it is made of a much lighter material than a wrestling mat. These sections of mat, when they are rolled and stacked vertically, are standing on their ends, standing up straight vertically, stand 6 feet high. That is from the top edge down to the floor.
And Kendrick was what, 5'10"?
He was 5'10", and so the idea that he would have gone inside the core opening of this mat to retrieve a shoe was just something altogether hard to imagine why he or anyone would have tried to retrieve a shoe when, as I said, the material was light enough that you could simply push the mat over if you couldn't lift it up. to retrieve your shoe. And the other thing that just didn't at all make sense was that the opening was measured to be 14 or 14 and a half inches at its widest point. Kendrick was 19 inches across in his shoulders. So the question becomes, how do you quote-unquote fall into an opening that would not have allowed you to even squeeze inside of? So that, of course, was an issue for us. Secondly, if he got stuck in the mat upside down and made it to the bottom to the point that his feet would have disappeared and nobody would have been able to see him down in the mat, then he would have gotten stuck at the top opening or top end of the opening, because the numbers remain the same. What's 14 and a half at the top is 14 and a half at the bottom, and of course his shoulder width doesn't change. So how did he squeeze himself into that opening? And if he did, it certainly would have taken much more than the time that they claimed he went missing and this class began.
Okay. Let's start here. If you look on the screen and there's pictures of Kendrick, you know, and the I think if I'm correct, one of the mat pictures is his father showing what it looked like for your shoulders to try to fit into that mat. And the second picture is actually Kendrick's body inside the mat. Well, one question I have, how did his tennis shoes get so neatly placed beside his leg if he dove into them, into the mat? Why weren't they on his feet? And if they weren't on his feet, how did they get inside the mat?
Well, that too poses another unanswered question. The fact that you are absolutely correct, if he was upside down in the mat, and if this mat, because I'm not able to see the particular photograph that you're making reference to, but I have a good idea of which photograph you're making reference to. He has a pair of shoes that are down near his knees. Then it would appear that when the mat was sitting vertically, somebody threw the shoes in after his body had been positioned upside down in the mat.
Or carefully placed them, because they seem very neatly placed beside his leg.
Yes.
Okay, so that was one question I didn't have an answer for. And then my second question about the whole incident, if the mat is somewhere between 6 feet and 7 feet, there's different reports of how tall it was. But let's just say Kenneth was shorter than the mat, regardless of how 6 feet or 7 feet. How am I understanding that he was supposed to get in there? Because without the assistance of another person or without a ladder, how would he have gotten his whole body into it?
Well, again, this is another unanswered question because it defies logic. For him to have squeezed into this opening would have been difficult enough, but for his body to have disappeared inside the hole, I think that that is almost an impossibility, simply because now we measured the mat. We know that the mat was no taller than 6 feet when it's standing up, rolled up on its end. And for Kendrick to have gone down into this hole, you would have to presume that he had his hands or arms extended out beyond the top of his head if he was reaching for something that was down in the bottom of this opening, this hole. That then means that his feet would have been sticking out of the top of the mat. That would have been clearly visible to anybody who was there in the gym. And, you know, that there's just no way that he could have caused his legs to disappear into the hole because, as we said before, the opening was too narrow to allow that to occur. In other words, even if he bent his legs at his knees, he could not have hidden his feet.
Okay, before we get to the day that the body was found, I want to establish that that night there was also a game in the gym, was it not?
Well, it wasn't in that gym.
Okay.
It was in another gym, as I understand it. And so there was quite a bit of activity on the school campus that was going on that evening. So we are not quite sure, you know, whether there is video that would show someone being in the vicinity of the old gymnasium at the time that this basketball game was going on in the new gymnasium.
Okay. There's just so many questions about this, y'all. I'm just like, I'm blown away. But if you just tuned in, you're listening to the topic, Kendrick Johnson's death, freak accident or murder. We're talking to Kendrick Johnson's parents, Jackie and Kenneth Johnson, along with Mr. King, their attorney. We're just trying to get a good understanding of how it is that we are supposed to believe that Kendrick Johnson, who seems to have been a very bright young man, would have thought it smart to dive into a mat and get some shoes. I'm lost with that one. And one question I want to ask, from all the reports that I'm seeing, they're saying that the kids at this school, at Lowes High School, obviously had to pay for lockers, and the stories are indicating that Kendrick did not have a locker. Is this true, or did he not have a locker, and therefore that's why he was keeping his shoes there, or is that not true?
No, the football player does not have to pay for lockers.
Okay. Oh. Yes, so Kendrick had a locker.
No, all the lockers to the football players were free, but Kendrick didn't like lockers, so that's why he didn't ever have a locker, because he didn't like leaving his stuff at school.
Okay. So when the stories that we're hearing that there's lots of kids that kept their shoes there, that's true?
Yes.
Okay. So fast forward, the evening of January 10th, 2013, Kendrick does not come home. At what time do you all realize something has gone wrong?
Well, go ahead, Mr. Johnson.
No, you go ahead, Ms. King.
I think that Mrs. Johnson indicates that Kendrick was very good, if not religious, about making contact with other family members if he was going to stay late or engage in some other activity after school hours. And when he did not more or less report in, and she received no word from him or any other family member as to his whereabouts, she became concerned and then began to make inquiry of her own to see where was he. There may have been an indication that he intended to attend the basketball game, that we are not yet in a position to confirm one way or the other, but we do have reports that he never was seen at the basketball game.
Okay. So Kendra doesn't make it home that night, and so was there a missing persons report filed?
Yes, one was filed, but it was one that the authorities, the police that is, did so reluctantly. They gave explanations to Ms. Johnson that they thought his being unaccounted for may have been the product of him being out with some friends or, as they put it, chasing girls. And,
so was this the night of the 10th or the morning of the 11th?
This would have been the night of the 10th.
Okay. So fast forward, Kenneth doesn't make it home all night. At what point does the family find out that something has gone wrong with Kenneth at the school?
It was somewhere, I believe, around 9:30 the following morning. Ms. Johnson, who is a school bus driver for the school system, she goes to the principal's office to try and establish what can be done to locate Kendrick, and in the course of being there in the principal's office, she overhears some conversation between a resource officer and some other individual connected with the school staff, indicating that they had located a body in the old gym.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So about 9:30 was about the time that I'm understanding the body was discovered. So she just happens to be there and understands about the same time everybody else does that a body, or the official report says that that 9:30 was the time that the body was discovered. That said, so the investigation is going on, and she's right there in the school. Do they tell her that it's Kendrick, or at what point does she realize the person that they're speaking of that's deceased is Kendrick Johnson?
Well, let me let Mrs. Johnson explain to you how that occurred.
Well, I was sitting in the guidance counselor's office, and I overheard the guidance counselor.
Speak up just a little bit.
I was sitting in the guidance counselor's office, and I overheard the guidance counselor and another lady talk.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that a body had been found. So I automatically knew right then and there it was my son.
No. Oh, my God. Just that mother intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, okay, so you're right there. You're in the school. You feel that the body is that they found is Kendrick's. So are you taken to the location where the body is?
No. I never got a chance to go to that location where the body was.
Okay. What stopped you from going?
They wouldn't let nobody in.
Okay. So nobody was allowed in except for, I'm assuming, law enforcement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what was the, and I know and everybody else know when something like that is going on, you know, rumors are flying and, you know, all kind of speculation is going on. What is the rumor mill at this point? You know, a body has been found. Is anybody talking? Is anybody saying anything about what they know, or what is the situation?
No, everybody was just, well, the Galvin Council, where I was sitting at, they were just running around whispering. Nobody was saying anything to me until I got up and I left and I went outdoors, and that's when one of the resource officers came up to me and I asked her, was that my child? And she told me yes.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine what that moment must have been like. So at this moment, you're aware that it's Kendrick. Do you go to the principal or to the law enforcement officers and demand to see him, or what are you being told?
I just lost it when she told me it was my child.
I can imagine. I can imagine.
And they
so I'm sure. I'm sorry.
They didn't take me inside of a building, and one of the officers kept saying that, "Miss Johnson, we don't really know whether this is Kendrick or not. Why are you so upset?"
Ooh. And your response was?
I know that's my child. I know another child I've been reported missing, but mine.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. So they've taken you out of the location where the body is and put you in another building.
No. We were still at Loud High. We were just sitting in a room.
Okay, you were sitting in a room. So you're there. I'm sure the police are everywhere, you know, and people are running. Did you get the feeling immediately that, you know, they were keeping you away from the scene for, you know, trying to protect you, or did you get the feeling like they're keeping you away because they didn't want you to see something?
They didn't want me to see something.
Wow. Mm. Okay, so Miss Johnson is at Lyles High School. She knows now that Kendrick is the body, is the person that they found deceased in the gym. They're not allowing her to see him. Do you call Mr. Johnson and say, "Get here, something's wrong"? Do you call the rest of the family? What happened?
Well, it was some of my other family members already out there. I had lost it at that point. I was just out of it. Family was calling other family members. I did call Kenneth at some point, but I was so frantic, he didn't understand me, so some of my other family members called him.
I had to tell him what's going on. And Mr. Johnson, I can only imagine that was the toughest phone call you ever received.
Yes, it was. That's most.
And I understand you were out of town, which made it worse.
Yes, I was. I was coming out of Philadelphia.
Okay, so the family that is there, I'm sure there's a clan by now because of, you know, of the circumstances. And still with all of you all there, you still were not able to convince law enforcement to let you view the body of your son.
I asked them, but they never did.
They never did. Okay, So is anybody saying anything to you about what the crime scene looked like? Is any, you know, a lot of times there's somebody who saw something, and, you know, because somebody, I understand that there were some young ladies, I think, that entered the gym that morning and found the body. Is that the case?
Yes, but they kept them away from everybody. We didn't get to talk to anybody.
Okay, so you didn't get a chance to talk to anybody. Okay, so I understand that they did not allow you to identify the body. So my question is, how was Kendrick identified if you all didn't identify the body for 2 days?
They let my daughter identify the pair of shoes on a camera phone.
Okay, I'm sorry. I heard that and it went by me and then it came back. Did you say she identified a pair of tennis shoes and that's how they identified Kendrick's body?
Yes, a pair of shoes.
And
well, Attorney King,
again,
when did they start identifying bodies by tennis shoes?
Well, it's certainly nothing I've ever heard of in my better than 32 years of practice. And for them to do so via a photo that is shown to the daughter over a camera that people have in their phones, that makes it even more aggravating, in my opinion.
I understand that the sheriff's department told the family that there's some law that doesn't allow you to identify a body or something to that effect. Is that what I understand to be true?
Well, I don't know that that's what they told the family, but it's, again, something I've never heard of in all of my years of practice.
Well, what was the official, I guess my question then is, what was the official reason that they gave the family that they could not view the body?
Well, again, we don't know what the official reason is. At least I've never seen any report that identifies some reason why Mrs. Johnson or another family member wasn't allowed to identify Kendrick.
Okay, let me rephrase the question then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any kids, so I don't even want to pretend I understand what they went through. I know that I can't even envision it. But let's just say hypothetically, if you're there and you're asking to see your child, what logical reason can they tell you that they at some point cannot, I mean, at some point, you mean there's no point that it was okay for her to go and look at the body, period, before they removed the body from the gym? They had to say something. So I guess I have to pose this to Ms. Johnson. When they're saying you can't go view the body, what is the reason that the sheriff is saying that you cannot go?
Because it was a crime scene. That was all the explanation they gave.
And everybody knows that when a crime scene happens, they put up the yellow tape, they you know, collect all of their evidence, and at some point the yellow tape is taken down and the body is removed. So at that point, when they've collected all their evidence, still you were not able to see the body?
No.
Okay.
And the other thing that you need to take into consideration is that if you saw any of the photographs of what Kendrick's face looked like on that particular morning, then, of course, you would have wanted to get somebody who knew him in a very intimate way to identify him, because he had been disfigured by that point.
Mm. Okay.
And it wasn't going to be a matter of somebody just simply taking a school photograph and matching it against what they saw on the morning of the 11th.
Okay. So we understand that at 9:30 a.m. On the 11th, basically, is when they discovered the body. And within 24 hours and prior to a final autopsy, the sheriff had announced that he announced it in a press conference that the investigation was pretty much concluded and that it was no foul play?
Well, he didn't say that the investigation was concluded. I think they always left people with the impression that the investigation was still ongoing. But what was surprising was that he could come up with such a hard and fast explanation for why he was in the shape that he was in, how he wound up being in the mat. He didn't have the benefit of any video, according to the reports we've received, showing Kendrick going into the mat. He didn't have the benefit of an eyewitness report saying, I saw Kendrick go into the mat, or that I heard Kendrick say to me that I am going to go get my shoes and they're located inside this mat. So what information was he going off of to then say to the press this was evidence that there was no foul play and that he was retrieving a shoe and just simply got stuck in the mat and couldn't free himself?
Now, what I understand is that this school had 3,000 students. So you have a potential of like 3,000 witnesses. So how could he draw such a conclusion in 24 hours without having talked with all of these witnesses?
Well, that's a question I think you'd have to pose to the sheriff, because there is no way that I could imagine any kind of investigation to have even progressed without you first having the opportunity to interview certainly way more students than he did or his investigators did on that morning.
And then when you're talking about 3,000 students you have, how many teachers and how many staff members also that were potential witnesses? So how could he possibly have made that statement 24 hours after discovering the body?
Again, you'd have to ask the sheriff, but we find it hard to imagine that he could come up with a good answer.
I understand he said at some point that he interviewed each student and their parents were present. Now, I would only think that if he had to arrange 3,000 interviews with the parents and the children, that that took quite a bit of scheduling. And I just can't imagine that all took place in 24 hours either.
Yes, and I think that it is also clear to us at this point that he didn't interview 3,000 students, even when he had the benefit of several months before the final investigative report was released. We were given a copy of these reports. They were heavily redacted so that we couldn't see the identities of any of the students who were interviewed, but judging from my review of those reports, I don't think that there was even as many as 100, perhaps less than 50 students that were interviewed.
You know, if you give me a police report and you scratch out the names and you tell me that this is an actual report, and so really I have no way of verifying that scratch out is even a real person, how do you know that those interviews were even conducted?
Well, you don't. And the way in which, in other words, what we did was we submitted what is called a open records request. And here in the state of Georgia, any individual can submit upon a governmental entity a request for copies of reports and various other documents, and you, by law, are entitled to get copies of these reports unless there is some special provision which would authorize it not being disclosed. And in this instance, we did not get reports that identified the persons who were interviewed because the sheriff's office as well as the school board took the position that the names or other means of identifying these students constituted school records. And in this state, school records are confidential. So as a result, we didn't get the information that we needed in order to conduct an investigation of our own in terms of verifying what any of these students may have said to the investigators or didn't say to the investigators.
Wait a minute. So you're saying not only was the name removed, the statement was removed as well?
Well, not the statement, but the identity of the individuals. You understand that some of these individuals, you know, were known to us as persons who were just friends of Kendrick's or persons who were known in the community. Mm-hmm. But exactly what that individual had to say and whether or not what was reported in the investigative report was the complete statement that any one of these individuals may have given the police, we're not able to verify that.
Okay. So, and I'm going to put it on record, I myself, under the Freedom of Information Act, requested Kendrick Johnson's file from the Lowes County Sheriff's Department. And what I was given, and I know they know that this wasn't the way it was supposed to go, but what they sent me was just a copy of the autopsy report. And I happened to get that the exact day that it came out. That's it, which I know they know that that wasn't right, and they know that per the the Freedom of Information Act, that's not the way that it was supposed to happen, but that's exactly what happened, which that's never happened to us before. When we request under the Freedom of Information Act, every other law enforcement agency knows that they're supposed to give us, you know, within reason, information that we request, like the police report, the autopsy report with the photos, those types of things, but that was not released. The only thing we did receive was a copy of the autopsy report. And let's talk about that. The autopsy report said that he died of what, positional asphyxiation? Is that how it's pronounced?
Asphyxiation, that's correct.
So,
In layman's terms, that's nothing more than suffocation due to the body being in a position that wouldn't allow the individual to breathe. So you can have positional asphyxiation from somebody who, let's say, for instance, a 200-pound individual sits on your chest, thus inhibiting your ability to breathe. That can bring about positional asphyxiation. They're maintaining, however, that because he was upside down in the mat, that that position ultimately led to him suffocating because his lungs were not able to function properly given the weight of his body, well, what would be the lower portion of his body then applying force upon the rib cage and the lungs, and therefore he dies as a result of suffocation.
Okay, and that brings up my next question. If that is the official cause of death, why am I getting information that there was a large amount of blood at the scene?
Well, they're saying that the blood basically seeped from his eyes and his ears and possibly his nose and mouth. But clearly, based upon our having consulted with experts in that field, they're saying that the blood would have come from the ears and possibly the nose and the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So every person who's turned upside down and dies in that position, you mean the blood is going to spill out of those areas because they're turned upside down?
Well, I don't know that I certainly have enough expertise to say that that is the case, but one of the things that was pointed out was that if you are upside down, it takes a bit more time for you to die as a result of suffocation. I'm sure that many of your listeners are familiar with these chairs that people who have back problems can purchase that allows them to position themselves upside down as a way of relieving pressure on the spinal column. And that, of course, suggests to me that simply being upside down doesn't mean that you're going to die. It takes some while being in that position, simply, again, being in that position for you to then endanger yourself. So you stack that against him having to, quote-unquote, fall into an opening and be stuck in that position. Would it have taken more than the 14 minutes that lapsed between the time at which he was last seen and the point at which the next class in that gymnasium took place? Would he have lost consciousness? Would he have somehow succumbed to some other physical condition that would have made him or made it impossible for him to draw attention to his plight, his being stuck in the mat?
Let's think of the mat for a minute. I understand the mat, again, 6-7 feet tall. And I think I heard the sheriff say that the weight of the mat was incredible. And I don't, I'm looking for my notes on exactly how much he said they weighed. But I beg to differ with the weight that he gave. He gave it an incredible, and if we're talking about the same mat that the gymnast used, those mats are not nearly as heavy as the sheriff's statement that they were. That said, it seems almost that if this young man ran track, he lifted weights, he played football, he played basketball, that he was physically in shape to have tilted this thing. And I'm looking for my notes. I want to say the amount that he said it weighed was just incredible, and I just found that hard to believe. That first of all, the toxicology report indicated that there was no alcohol, drugs, or any other intoxicants in Kendrick's body at the time of his death. So we know he wasn't high on anything, you know, at the time that this happened, and I don't believe Kendrick was even ever suspected of using any type of drugs. So let's be clear on that, because a lot of times we saw in the Trayvon Martin case, everything was about what Trayvon did or didn't do. So that's not the case here. That said, I guess I'm trying to understand, he's a bright young man, and he's not, high on anything. Why is it that they want us to believe that he would have gotten in the mat in the first place when you're saying that he could have very easily just moved the mat over because it was that light?
Yeah, well, they have to come up with some kind of explanation to address the questions that you've just raised. And one of the things that I would like to focus upon, mm-hmm, is in giving the description by the sheriff, mm-hmm, he uses the word fall or fell,
mm-hmm,
as to suggest that gravity is what drew him to the bottom,
mm-hmm,
of the opening. And given the dimensions of the opening and his shoulder width, you can't fall into that opening.
Hmm.
The only way that you could wind up being in that opening, in the position that he was in, was if he was rolled up into the mat.
Hmm.
And so, it's just a almost unimaginable explanation that the sheriff has put out there for people to assume is at all factual.
I think, and I just found my notes on it, he said the gymnasts were 7 feet tall and weighed 700 pounds and were being stacked vertically. So basically they're saying that Kendrick attempted to get his shoe from inside by diving into the mat. And I think I heard the sheriff say, one of his lieutenants say, that Kendrick was walking on top of some mat, and then he dove into the mat, which I'm trying to understand, if they're standing up vertically, wouldn't that be dangerous to be walking on top of them, trying to get to the one that had his shoe in it, and then he had to dive to the bottom? I mean, it's just like the craziest. I don't even know how they came up with that theory. I mean, it just seems like if he's an intelligent young man and he's not high on anything, why would you do that?
Well, again, let's focus upon the words that were used by the investigators. You are absolutely correct. They used the term that he dove into this opening. If you got down on your knees and were positioned over an opening, to even dive into an opening, your body, by instinct, I imagine, just kind of says, this is unnatural, this is dangerous. Unless I'm looking at a body of water and I already know that my I'm not risking hurting myself, you don't dive even into a pool. So this idea that he dove into this opening, the only image that I can come up with is something from a cartoon showing, you know, some figure leaping upward and then, much like on a diving board, changing the position in midair and then attempting to enter this hole. But it, and that's because, again, to dive means essentially to come from a position where your entire body is maybe suspended somehow in the air. I don't know. It's difficult to even imagine.
Well, let's move on to the. I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
Yes. Let's keep in mind the theory that. That he dove into the mat. That came a couple of days after. The first statement he made to me and my wife was that he got into the mat feet first. They say when they found him, he was feet first. His feet was on the floor, and he apparently when he got down into the mat, he bent over to pick up, to get his shoe, and he got stuck. So I told him that he was crazy. There's no way possible that can happen. So they came a couple of days later, then that's when they came with the story that he was dead first.
Oh, they changed it. Okay. Yeah. Now that, you know, and I'm sure after people began to question the first theory, then, of course, then they had to move to the second theory. I think what I'm concerned about is the coroner not being notified. Now, I guess I'm trying to understand, if the coroner is not called to the scene immediately upon the body being discovered, who pronounced Kendrick Johnson deceased?
Well, the coroner pronounced him dead, as is his responsibility whenever a body is discovered. And Mr. Watson, Bill Watson, who is the coroner for Lowndes County, he indicated in a news report, one in which he was interviewed by a television station, that he was not contacted until some 5 or 6 hours after Kendrick's body had been discovered there in the gym. He was extremely concerned about this delay because, number one, it was contrary to law. I assume that he considered this to be more than just an oversight because he was dealing with law enforcement officers whom he deals with regularly. And therefore had every reason to expect something other than being contacted so much later than when he was.
Now, I understand that, and I'm looking for the notes that the sheriff said, which I thought was the most ridiculous, and I'm going to just put that out there, statement that I think a sheriff could make. He said, I contacted the coroner later because I was afraid of a leak, and the coroner would have only been waiting around until the crime scene was finished to do their job. So therefore, and I'm paraphrasing, therefore I went ahead and just waited to call him because he was in fear of a leak coming out of the coroner's office, I'm assuming. But if you got 3,000 students on the campus, a potential leak could be, like, between the students and the faculty. The leak could be anywhere. Why would he be afraid that if he called the coroner, that the coroner would leak that that a student was deceased on the campus?
I don't know that there's a good answer for that. And certainly, even if there was the risk of there being a leak, the question is, a leak of what? Was it for purposes of trying to prevent something that was going to occur, or had it already occurred, and therefore what would a leak have prevented? The damage was already done. Kendrick was already dead. If anything, you wanted it to be known that you were investigating what occurred. And then secondly, it's the coroner's job to know whether you will or feel that you can rely upon him to keep whatever information you give him a secret or not. He has a responsibility to know, and it is the duty of the law enforcement officers to report that information to him.
Okay. So that established. Explain to me why the EMTs were called if the body if Kendrick Johnson was deceased. Why was EMTs called?
Well, I think that they were called simply as a matter of procedure, because if there was a chance that Kendrick was still in a position to be saved, that they would be the first responders who would have had the expertise to engage in some life-saving maneuver. But once they arrived, what we found to be interesting was that they saw what they thought was a crime scene from the word go. They observed what they considered to be bruising on the right side of Kendrick's face. And for them to have prepared a report, and we would also have to assume that there was some kind of exchange, some kind of communication going on between the EMTs and the investigators, how they could observe evidence of bruising, as in evidence of an assault, and the sheriff say that there was no evidence of foul play, that is another one of these unanswered questions.
But didn't the EMTs also state the body to be found one way, and the sheriff's department stated the body was found another way?
Well, that, again, we've not confirmed, but if that is what is in the report, certainly that is going to be something that is going to have to be resolved and investigated.
So the coroner is called 6 hours later, you know, for reasons, like I said, the sheriff said that he was afraid of a leak if he had called him earlier. The, I understand per one of the interviews I saw with the coroner, Coroner Bill Gates, that he stated
Bill
that...
Bill Watson, you mean.
Bill Watson, I'm sorry, thank you. Bill Watson, thank you. That he felt that the crime scene had been compromised and that the body had been moved.
Yes. He did indicate that the body, in his opinion, had been moved. And the fact that he wasn't in a position to establish what was actually Kendrick's position at the time that the, I think that you had, according to a report, the instructor in the class that was taking place in the gym, he was reported to have tried to get to Kendrick by pushing over the mat that Kendrick's body was located in. That, of course, I think someone could accept as being plausible. What was not plausible was that, according to Mr. Watson, the body had been rolled back up into the mat when he got there. Question, why would you roll it back up into the mat if it wasn't in that position when the EMTs and the investigators first arrived? What were you attempting to do?
Wow. That's an excellent question. Did y'all get an answer?
Not yet.
Wow. You know, it's so much I don't understand, and I'm trying to be very, very careful with my wording here tonight. But, you know, the coroner, when they called him to the scene 6 hours later, did they merely just call him there just to pronounce him dead? Did he not come up with anything at that time? Did he have any findings once he, you know, got to the scene?
I don't believe that. And I hope that I'm not mischaracterizing the relationship between the coroner and the sheriff's department.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that the coroner was at all comfortable with how things had transpired, and I believe that if you saw the interview of the coroner and heard a later report on CNN that was going to re-air that interview, and Mr. Blackwell, who is a anchor with CNN, reporting that just moments before CNN was going to air Mr. Watson's criticisms, I guess, of the investigation, that Mr. Watson asked Mr. Blackwell not to air it. It seemed as though Mr. Watson wanted to retract what he had to say earlier, and it seemed as though he was under some kind of, well, for lack of a better word, yes.
I can imagine. I can only imagine, and I understand that, you know, in the small areas like that, I'm sure he has a very close relationship with the sheriff's department. So, yeah, I can imagine that, and that's probably to be expected. Let's fast forward to how does Kendrick's body go from? Let's just state this: if Kendrick's body is believed to be found in a situation in which the sheriff's department quickly determined that this was just a freak accident dated from a perfect storm, why was his body taken to the crime lab of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation for an autopsy?
Well, ordinarily, in smaller communities, such as Valdosta and communities much smaller than Valdosta. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation, their investigators will be called in to work homicide cases because many of the police departments and even the sheriff's departments don't have enough experience in conducting homicide investigations.
Mm-hmm.
So their expertise is many times relied upon. That's, first of all, how the GBI many times gets involved. But at the same time, these communities also don't have medical examiners, again, because there isn't enough in the way of these kinds of cases to justify having someone paid as a full-time medical examiner. So what they will ordinarily do is to have the Georgia Bureau of Investigation to take the body, send it to one of its crime labs where you do have a pathologist, somebody who is skilled in forensic pathology, to do the autopsy as a way of trying to establish the cause and manner of death.
So I guess my question is then, did the family consent to an autopsy and the body being sent there, or was this just automatic procedure?
This is more or less automatic procedure. Whenever there is a question as to cause and manner of death, the coroner is the one who really calls the shots.
Mm-hmm.
It may be in conjunction with consulting with the investigators and maybe the district attorney's office, but if it is not readily apparent what the cause of death happened to be, then an autopsy is going to be ordered. And but the peculiar thing in this instance was that even though Kendrick's body was discovered on a Friday morning, on a Friday morning, and in a position to be moved from the scene, his body was not taken directly to the crime lab, which for that area would have been in Macon, Georgia, some 2 hours or more away from Valdosta. Rather, his body was stored at a crime lab that was run by the Valdosta Police Department.
Mm.
If it wasn't just the police department, then it may have also serviced the Lowndes County Sheriff's Department as well. But the point is that we question, why wasn't his body immediately taken to the crime lab in Macon? What concerns us is that on the day that Mr. Johnson went to view his son's body, which was that following Sunday.
So 2 days later.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
He walked into the room where the body was stored and observed that it was inordinately warm inside this room.
So decomposition had been...
Well, certainly the warmer a room is, it does facilitate the acceleration of decomposition, which affects what ability you have to preserve evidence.
So it was not kept in a freezer?
Mr. Johnson indicates that the room was not only warm, but that when the drawer that Kendrick's body was located in was opened, the air that he felt was even warmer than it was outside of the drawer.
Okay. This is, I mean, you know, at this point, and I'll ask this question because, you know, I'm drawing this conclusion, and I don't know if everybody else is. Do you all feel that there's a cover-up within law enforcement as far as this investigation is concerned?
I think that it is clear that we believe that this investigation was not conducted properly.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that there are so many questions that one is faced with in trying to understand everything from the sheriff's theory to the way in which this investigation was conducted, it makes you to wonder what was actually going on here. Because this is like no other investigation, at least I've ever witnessed. And certainly I think that most people would say that there are just too many unanswered questions to consider how the investigation was conducted as being one that was legitimate.
Well, does the family, along with you, Mr. King, do you all feel that the Sheriff's Department has been cooperative with you all in terms of turning over information in a timely manner or turning the information over to you at all?
No, I can say that from the time that the Johnsons retained me to assist them in trying to get to the bottom of their son's death, that we have made repeated attempts to get information from the Sheriff's Department. We had even been promised on one occasion that they were going to show us the video, which would have been perhaps the most objective piece of evidence that they had in their possession, but then they changed their mind and decided that for whatever reasons they were not going to show us the video. And even the video, if you want to call it that, because it's more like time-lapse photography. In other words, instead of 30 frames a second, what we're given is maybe one frame for every half second or second. So you see a bunch of stills when you look at the tape of Kendrick coming into the gym. They have refused to allow the Johnsons to see what would have been the last images that anybody has of their child in life.
Wow. Well, I tell y'all what. My Facebook this week, once I posted that I was doing this show, was absolutely flooded with requests for me to state two things. First of all, they wanted me to state how can people donate to this cause, because we know, unfortunately, we're living in a time that people don't talk unless people put up money. So people were saying they knew that that would be the case, and they felt that people would come forward if there was a reward of a substantial amount. So people asked me to state that tonight, so I'm going to state that. Listen, y'all, this is a cause that you need to give to. If it's going to take money to get someone to give information that's going to lead to the arrest and prosecution of persons or the person or persons that were involved in the murder of Kendrick Johnson, because that's what the family is calling it, then then we're going to ask you to give tonight. And so we're going to give you information at the end of the show that tells you how you can go to a Bank of America in your area and give to this particular cause, because I really feel that's the only way that they're going to get information. It's 8 months later, and they don't have what they need to proceed forward with getting justice for Kendrick. And also, people wanted me to find out how it was that they could contact the Department of Justice and ask that an investigation be opened as far as Kendrick Johnson's death is concerned. Has the Department of Justice been contacted?
Yes, they have. We have contacted both the U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Georgia, who would have jurisdiction over the Lowndes County area, as well as making direct appeals to Attorney General Eric Holder. At this point, what we've been advised is that the U.S. attorney out of Macon, whose name is Michael Moore, has obtained copies of the investigative reports and is in the process of reviewing them. I don't know what the U.S. attorney, excuse me, the Department of Justice out of D.C. has acquired, but I can only assume that Mr. Moore sent copies to members of the DOJ in Washington, and that some review is taking place, but I'm not able to comment on either what they have as an opinion or what kind of timetable that we are operating under.
Understand. Well, I'm going to give you the information, and I suggest anybody who wants to help with this call, I suggest you get your pens and paper ready. I'm going to give the information out now, and then I'm going to give it out again at the end of the show. If you want to give to this cause, and that is, you know, it's going to take investigators on this. You know, this is a big undertaking to find investigators and people who can get together and organize this thing, like the Trayvon Martin situation was. And I understand, Mr. King, it cost a lot of money for them to do it like that. I was told a lot of money went into PR people and all the team that they put together to put that information out there as quickly and as efficiently as it was done. Is that correct?
That's correct. We had hired two investigators already, and we actually need more. Because, again, in a community the size of Valdosta, I mean, you talk about what may have been the pressure that the coroner was under, then you can only imagine what pressures your average citizen, who may have a child that came home and brought some information about what they observed, but the parents being fearful of what could be the consequence of stepping forward and having to share that information and not knowing who to share it with, what kind of pressure they're under. And it is only going to be as a result of, number one, in my opinion, the Department of Justice stepping in and, you know, exerting its influence as being more powerful than any law enforcement agency there in the Lowndes County agency area, excuse me, as well as, you know, having the confidence that if they do risk stepping forward, that it will not be for naught. It won't be an act of futility, but that they could reasonably expect that what information they share will be followed up on and that good use will be made of it. So we do need the ability to lure people who have information out, not necessarily into the open, but to put them in a position so that they feel that there's some inducement, whether it be a reward or whether it be the security of knowing that any retaliation that they may suffer, they'll have some protection from that. We do need to get as much as we can in the way of resources to make that happen.
Okay, y'all, hope you got your pens and paper ready. First of all, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the topic, Kendrick Johnson's death, freak accident or murder. We're talking to the parents of Kendrick Johnson, Jackie and Kenneth Johnson, along with Shaveen King, the family's attorney. And we're asking, listen, y'all, and y'all know Center Stage is not big very often unless I see a call that's worthy, but I was flooded this week with a request for people to get information on how they can donate to this particular cause because they watched the Trayvon Martin case and they realized, you know, what type of let's just say funds it took to put that operation together, to keep that in front of the media and to make certain that people were aware play by play of what was going on with that case. Well, that's exactly what needs to happen with the Kendrick Johnson case. And we as black folks need to realize that sometimes we have to do more than just talk about it. We have to be about it. So they have an account set up under the name Kendrick KJ Johnson Justice Movement. That's Kendrick KJ Kendrick KJ Johnson Justice Movement at Bank of America. And the account number is 3340-3099-3208. Again, that's at Bank of America under Kendrick KJ Johnson Justice Movement. The account number is 3340-3099-3208. And also, I saw a number where you could contact the Department of Justice and ask them to step in and do something as far as investigating this case. And the number I saw was 202-504-4609. Again, contact the Department of Justice on this particular situation and tell them that there needs to be justice for Kendrick Johnson. And you can reach them at 202-504-4609. Now let's talk about...
Might I add one other thing that your listeners can do? And
sure.
That is to contact their representative, their congressional representatives,
mm-hmm.
in their respective areas, to alert them as to their concern about this investigation or need for intervention by the Department of Justice. And if you, even if you are not in a district that is represented by a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, I think mm-hmm. that to reach out to that organization would also be most worthwhile.
Okay. The NAACP, are they involved?
Yes, most definitely. The NAACP, as well as the National Action Network, which is Reverend Sharpton's organization.
Gotcha. Okay, now, one thing that we saw in researching for this show, and we looked everywhere to find every piece of information we could on it, we understand that there's some talk that Kendrick had a problem with a person or person the day of or the day before he went missing. Can anybody collaborate there?
Well, I don't know whether or not that has been corroborated. We do know that he had some run-ins with... we'll call them persons of interest. We're not in a position to, during this show, to share the identity of who those persons are. But it certainly, in our opinion, raises questions as to whether the identity of these individuals at all figures into why the sheriff has handled the investigation the way that he has.
So I saw on one of the videos on YouTube that the day Kendrick's body was found, someone who was a student at the same high school posted something to the effect, you start messing with goons, bodies start showing up. And I understand that page has since been taken down. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, we are aware of that particular posting. I think that we are also aware of who the individual was that made that statement. But it would be, I think, speculative on our part to assume that they were directly involved. They may, of course, be aware of other information, such as, you know, how Kendrick was killed, but to indicate that or to reveal their identity at this point, I think, would suggest that they had some involvement, and we're not prepared to make that kind of statement at this time.
I understand. I also found in research that the body was very swollen. Has anyone been able to explain why the body was very swollen?
I think that that perhaps was a result of a combination of maybe two things. Number one, the position in which the body was discovered. That is, there's a question in our own minds. Was Kendrick dead at the time that his body was placed in the mat? If it was, then of course I can only assume that the heart function had ceased, in which case the decomposition process would have begun and blood would have begun to pool in a way that was governed by gravity and caused his head and lower upper torso to expand or swell. We are also concerned that, again, how his body was stored for the two or more days that he was still in Valdosta before he was transported to the crime lab in Macon, whether or not that contributed, that is, these rather warm conditions that were present in the crime lab in Valdosta, whether that contributed to the swelling as well.
And I understand, you know, that the sheriff came back pretty quickly and said that the physical, forensic, and testimonial evidence all matched the fact that it was an accident. You know, looks like, you know, making a statement that conclusive early on seemed like almost being negligent to say something that definitive after just a short period of time. We covered that earlier, but I just saw my notes on that. He said the physical, forensic, and testimony, the autopsy hadn't even been done at that point. I mean, it was just the testimonial couldn't have all been concluded that early on. The physical evidence, I mean, how could he have drawn that conclusion and he was just a sheriff and not a pathologist?
Well, it also raises the question, what testimony is he referring to? There were no eyewitnesses according to his report. There were no eyewitnesses. So where's the testimony in terms of what occurred? So that seems to be one of the kinds of statements somebody in his position might make as a way of saying, well, I'm speaking with authority, when in fact, upon closer examination, it doesn't make any sense.
You know, I have to agree with that. You know, the original autopsy kind of went along with what the police or the sheriff's department had said. And I think the sheriff said there was no gunshot wounds, there was no stab wounds, you know, and that there was no bruising on the body. And the original autopsy said that there was no bruising, yet the paramedics report said that there was bruising on the right jaw. Has anybody ever been able to explain how the two of them are seen totally opposite things?
No. And, of course, it raises the question. I mean, when you look at the autopsy and you see what the pathologist had drawn as conclusions, she makes reference to her reliance upon the police reports. And so it suggests to me that really you're doing nothing more than relying upon information that you yourself have not been able to confirm. You certainly are in a position to say, well, my findings may be consistent with what the investigators have reported, but for you to adopt them and then to adopt them so incompletely, because a part of the investigators' report seemingly would have involved you adopting what the EMTs, who were the most expert individuals on the scene regarding a cause of death. If they noted in their report that there was evidence of bruising and you never made mention of it in the autopsy report, and they are the most expert individuals when it comes to medical findings who were actually there at the time, how do you ignore what they had observed and just simply go off of what these officers claim to have gotten as information, which was really nothing? They hadn't gotten any, again, eyewitness, they hadn't gotten any video, they hadn't gotten anything that would explain him being in that position at that time.
Okay, let me go back to, because I'm still stuck on, if the body, and I'm thinking the body immediately went to Macon for the autopsy, but you're saying it was in Valdosta for 2 days. If it was in Valdosta for 2 days and not in Macon where the autopsy was performed, why was the family prohibited from seeing the body for 2 days?
Well, again, I hate to sound repetitious, but there is no explanation that we have. I would assume that the crime lab, whether it had been in Macon or any other location that was manned by the GBI, would have the ability to receive bodies 24/7. These kinds of investigations are of such gravity that the delay in getting what is your primary piece of evidence, that is the body, requires that it be handled with the utmost of care.
Yeah.
And if you can't properly store the evidence, then you're really saying that you're not interested in doing a good job. So we can't understand why the body wasn't immediately taken to Macon instead of it being stored in a location that appears that they didn't have the facilities, they didn't have the wherewithal to properly preserve the primary piece of evidence that was in their possession, and that was Kendrick's body.
Okay, so the body sits in Valdosta for 2 days. We still can't explain why the family was not able to view the body. Mr. Johnson is able to go after the 2 days, let's just say 2 days later, to view the body, and it's being stored in very warm conditions. Okay, so then the body goes to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, I guess I'm assuming Sunday, and they do an autopsy, and basically, what does the autopsy come back? Basically, that there was no foul play, correct?
Well, the body actually went the following Monday. Is that not correct, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, the body went Monday morning.
So 3 days later.
Yes.
So by this time, the body has sat in bad conditions for 3 days, which probably started at least some decomposition.
Yes. And why they would hold on to the body that long, again, we have no good answer for. You just have to assume that this kind of failure on the part of the authorities was more than just poor judgment. I would have to give that opinion because this is one of the most serious kinds of investigations that law enforcement conduct, and that is homicides. We're all familiar with the importance of properly handling evidence that comes in connection with a homicide investigation when you think back to the O.J. Simpson trial and how it was that the defense had attacked the prosecution when one of the investigators, who was an Asian fella, was accused of walking around with evidence inside a briefcase for what was considered to be an inappropriate period of time. And how it compromised the investigation and therefore put the prosecution in a difficult position to say with certainty that evidence was properly preserved. So the preservation of evidence, you would assume, has to be a foremost consideration on the part of the investigators if they're interested in doing a good job.
So basically you all are not or were not comfortable with the autopsy done by the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, and so therefore you all had the body exhumed, I'm understanding, and a second autopsy was performed?
That's correct.
Have the results come back?
No. We have not yet received the results, but we anticipate that we'll have the results shortly.
Okay. You know, has the Louth County Sheriff's Department closed the investigation yet?
Yes, they have. That was the only means by which we were able to get copies of the investigative reports, because up until that point, they were able to say to us that they were not required to release their investigative reports because this was an ongoing investigation, which is one of the provisions under the Open Records Act that then relieves the Sheriff's Department of having to disclose what is in its files.
I pose this question to Mr. and Mrs. Johnson. How hard was it to disturb Kendrick's remains to do that second autopsy? Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
Yes, it's the one of the most difficult things anyone want to go through.
And I understand that Kendrick's sister was denied an opportunity to walk across the stage for her graduation this year. Why was that?
They didn't give us any explanation. I do know that the guidance counselor called her and asked her what she's going to walk and told her to make sure that she called her and let her know immediately what she's going to walk. So by then, I called the guidance counselor. And then she tells my daughter that she can't walk. So then I tried to call her back again, and she wouldn't ever answer the phone.
Wow. So y'all, listen carefully. Louds High School denied Kendrick's sister to graduate. I mean, well, she graduated, but she wasn't able to walk across the stage. No explanation given to the family whatsoever. I mean, there's just so many things about this that just does not make sense. Another thing, going back to the autopsy with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, I'm getting tongue-tied tonight, Joe. I understand that the body went there with clothes on, but when the body arrived back in Valdosta at the funeral home, the clothes were mysteriously missing.
Yes. One of the things that the Johnsons had requested during the time that we were waiting for the autopsy report to be completed by the GBI was there was a request made for the personal effects of Kendrick that would have been delivered with the body to the GBI crime lab. And the only personal effects that the Johnsons ever received happened to have been a pair of headphones that were really earbuds that Kendrick used in connection with a cell phone that he really used as an MP3 player. It wasn't a phone that was activated. But when you look at the autopsy report and you see the clothing that he had on at the time that he arrived at the crime lab, he had on as many as three pairs of shorts and three upper garments in the way of shirts. All of those garments were missing by the time that they got to the funeral home. Now, we don't know at what point between leaving the crime lab, that is, the body being transported from the crime lab back to Valdosta to the funeral home, where those garments went missing. But it is certainly clear to us that they just couldn't disappear. And the thing that we're clearly concerned about is that these garments may have possessed DNA or other trace evidence that might lead us to the identity of the persons responsible for his death.
Wow. I so agree. Has the school reached out to the parents at all to give any type of apology or explanation for what happened that day?
No. As a matter of fact, at the time of Kendrick's funeral, I mean, if you understand and have an appreciation for the camaraderie that is many times shared amongst team members, here is a youngster who was a member of a football team. He ran track. He played basketball. He had a relationship with the coaching staff in each of those sports, and the idea that none of those individuals showed up to his funeral, with the exception of a track coach who really was not a member of the high school's track team, or let me say that he was not a member of the high school staff. He was a junior high staff member, and who has seen fit to name a award in the name of Kendrick that he indicates he will give out each year as a way of symbolizing the kind of athlete and the kind of person that Kendrick was. But for none of his football teammates or coaching staff members to have appeared at his funeral, I think makes a unbelievable statement.
I agree 100%. Ms. Johnson, I understand that you have been banned from the high school grounds since Kendrick's death. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that correct,
Ms.
Johnson?
That's correct.
Why is it you that was banned, or was it her that was banned?
Both of us. We all aren't allowed to go to the school. Well, we aren't allowed. We have to consult with our attorney to have that check to the school.
Okay, and why is that?
You got that, Ms. King. Ms. King?
The explanation that I was given by the school board's attorney is that for some unexplained reason, their appearance would somehow lead to an unexplained difficulty.
Wow.
Don't know whether it is the mere sight of them on the campus was going to cause some student to undergo some kind of episode of some sort or another that was going to be, I really am at a total loss, but this was what was explained to me by the school board's attorney when we were trying to arrange an opportunity to go to the gym and to make a personal investigation as to what the layout of the gym happened to be, and, you know, this, that, and the other. And so the school board's attorney explained that, well, you'll have to come after school hours. Why? Well, because we'll still have students on campus, and we don't want to create a disturbance.
Hmm.
Now, in that regard, I think that it's important to also understand that there was a young lady who, within just a matter of a couple of days, it seems, after Kendrick's death, she went online and posted a YouTube video in which she made an appeal that her fellow students, as well as others, not simply sit back and allow this explanation that had been offered by the sheriff to go unchallenged. And when she made that appeal, it quickly got back to the staff at the school, and she was told that unless she took the YouTube video down, that she would be placed in in-school suspension.
Wow. I understand the gymnasium where Kendrick's body was found has been torn down. Is that correct?
No, I don't believe that that is correct. I do know that we were concerned that there were certain modifications that they were going to make to the older gym that we thought would lead to the destruction of evidence. I think that but for the fact that we intervened and promptly notified the authorities, that we thought that it was totally incomprehensible how you could have an ongoing investigation and allow some kind of destruction of evidence to occur, that they more or less delayed that process. Now, exactly what it is that they have planned or had planned to change about the gym, and whether it would result in the destruction of evidence, well, we can only guess at this point. But we are satisfied that even if they don't disturb anything there in the gymnasium where Kendrick's body was found, for them to do any kind of modification or destruction of the areas that were peripheral to the gymnasium would also perhaps result in the destruction of evidence. Why? Because we're not at all believing that Kendrick was killed in that gym. If you had a class of kids coming into the gym 14 minutes after he was last observed, and none of those kids could say to you they do anything about Kendrick being in the position that the sheriff would have you to believe, then it says to us his death took place elsewhere and was only put there the night after his death.
Wow. Okay, y'all, that's going to have to be the final word. You know, I talked to Mr. King prior to the show, and Mr. King said, do you want me to be on the whole 2 hours? And I promised him the 2 hours goes by very quickly. And, y'all, listen, we have covered this from the root to the tube tonight. What happened to Kendrick Johnson? Freak accident or murder? And you've heard the evidence tonight, y'all. You know, and this family needs your help. I feel obligated to ask y'all to try to give. I mean, if you got it, it doesn't have to be much. But if you can just give something, if you got a Bank of America in your area, stop by Bank of America and give to the Kendrick K.J. Johnson Justice Movement. That's the Kendrick K.J. Johnson Justice Movement at Bank of America. The account number is 3340-3099-3208, and I will post that on the page. And also, contact the Department of Justice at 202-504-4609 and ask them to look into the death of Kendrick Johnson. Is there any other information you all want to put out about rallies that may be going on?
Mr. Johnson?
Yes. I have to get back with you because I don't forgot that. Got the lady's name? I don't have that right on hand right now.
Okay, where can they go for that information at a later time?
It is
just the KJ page.
Just the KJ page.
Okay, go to the Rest in Peace Kendrick Johnson Facebook page.
No, Justice for Kendrick.
I'm sorry, it's what? Justice for Kendrick Johnson?
Yes.
Okay. And where can they, if Mr. King, if they have some information about this and they're afraid to go directly to the authorities with it, where can they, tell somebody?
Well, let me ask that people can contact my office. My telephone number is area code 229-436-0524. And our fax number is area code 229-883-6382.
Okay, y'all, let's go have... Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry. You can finish, Mr. Kane.
Yeah, that's it.
Y'all, reminder that that's going to have to be the final word. We thank Mr. and Mrs. Johnson for being with us, Jackie and Kenneth Johnson, along with Attorney Shaveen King for being our guest tonight. Also, a reminder, y'all, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, a reminder, each and every Friday night, this is exactly what we do from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker to check out the show. Again, thank you to my guests, Jackie and Kenneth Johnson, and Mr. Shaveen King for being with me tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening. If you have a story that you'd like us to look into here at Center Stage, y'all know we'll do it. Drop me a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Okay, we got to get out of here, y'all, and make way for somebody else to do what we that does what we do, to step to the board. So we'll see you next week, same time, same place. See you next week. Bye-bye.